Let's talk more about Seattle's move against gay conversion therapy. As you just heard, Seattle became America's third city to outlaw the practice, and reporter Sydney Brownstone with The Stranger broke down in tears as she watched the city council unanimously pass that resolution. She told me why the vote affected her so deeply.
I've never expected myself to cry during a city council meeting because sometimes they can be pretty boring, but I started tearing up when Lorena Gonzalez said that being gay or lesbian or bisexual or transgender is not an illness, nor does it need a cure. For some reason, that just kind of started the waterworks.
Why was that so emotional for you?
I think anyone who is gay or lesbian or bisexual or transgender or gender nonconforming or asexual has interactions with people who are supposed to love and support them that are not necessarily loving and supporting. When I came out to a very close family member of mine, someone who loves me dearly, would do anything in the world for me, I told that person that I wasn't straight. They just looked at me and they said, "Yes, you are. You're not gay." And it was really kind of crushing. That's not the worst thing you can go through by any measure of the imagination. Conversion therapy is especially relevant for people who grow up in deeply religious households whose parents are not only in denial that their children are gay or transgender or bisexual, but want to cure them, want to fix them, see something as deeply wrong with them. And I think that just in the culture, you know, we're sent that message almost every day. There's something wrong with you.
Let's bring all of our listeners with us who don't know what conversion therapy is.
Mm-hmm. So conversion therapy is this debunked, bogus, pseudoscientific practice in which therapists or religious leaders will try to take children often and cure them of being gay, cure them of being transgender. So they go through these ridiculous regimens where they're taught to, you know, reckon with their sexual urges, and then it doesn't cure you, obviously. It just creates lasting damage.
One of the council members, Deborah Juarez, compared conversion therapy to this country's treatment of Native Americans.
Yeah, I thought that was so important. You know, I think that we grow up thinking that everyone in the United States is born free. No matter who you are, no matter where you come from, you can accomplish whatever you want, just whatever your dreams aspire to be. And what she was saying is that that's actually not quite true. There's actually a very long history of forced assimilation in the United States, and conversion therapy for gay people is not the only example. For hundreds of years, and up until the 1970s, so very recently, Native American children were taken from their families and forced into boarding schools. And the motto of those boarding schools was, "Kill the Indian, save the man." So it was a type of, Canada has recognized this type of treatment as cultural genocide. It was literally trying to erase a cultural identity. And it's the same MO in conversion therapy. You know, you have these people trying to erase who you are, and it's so dehumanizing and so traumatic.
So let's talk about what this law, this new Seattle City law, actually does. Therapists who are found practicing conversion therapy get a $500 fine for the first time, a $1,000 fine after that. The city doesn't have the power to take a therapist's license away. So, Sydney Brownstone, you know City Council pretty well because of your job. When you put on your reporter hat here, do you think the possibility of getting fined will actually prevent therapists from doing conversion therapy?
Here's how I see the significance of this measure, because I hear in that question, like, the Seattle City Council often passes meaningless resolutions that are really annoying and have no impact, and I completely agree with that. In this case, I think it will have a real financial impact. Like, it's a clear financial disincentive to practice conversion therapy. Do we know how many people are actually practicing conversion therapy in Seattle? No. But I think we need to recognize when Seattle as a city has national significance. You know, we are not just playing in our own pond here. If Seattle can show that you can create financial disincentives for conversion therapy on a city level, I can see easily how other cities, maybe in Republican-dominated state legislatures, would want to replicate this. I mean, this year, the Republican National Committee came out with the most homophobic platform in history. The Republican Party has pushed farther to the right than it maybe ever has. And it's getting increasingly difficult to get any kind of progressive policies passed at the state level. So this is a moment to realize that Seattle can be a model in the same way that a $15 minimum wage was.
As you know, there are people who don't like the city's move, people who say that restricting what a therapist can say in their work is not only something a government shouldn't do, but they can't, that it's an assault on that therapist's free speech. What do you make of that?
This isn't like a therapist going on their own personal Facebook page and going, I think gay people need to be cured. That's one thing. This is a therapist taking someone's money, taking someone's trust, and then harming them. So, you know, I don't think the issue is free speech necessarily. I think it's consumer protection. And in New Jersey, that's the lawsuit that we saw. These therapists, these conversion therapy organizations, got sued for violating consumer protection laws. At the end of the day, they're peddling false science. They're peddling false treatment. To me, if we didn't have this financial disincentive, they would be legally liable for the type of harm that they're perpetuating anyway.
Sydney, we've talked about the effect that the city of Seattle's move could have on other governments, the effect it could have on therapists who may or may not be practicing this in the city. What effect do you think the city's law has on people, especially young people?
I think it gets young people engaged with the political process. It's rare to have a story kind of blow up on your newsfeed. And, you know, when I was watching the city council meeting, I wrote maybe like a 4-paragraph blog post about it. This was not something that I put a ton of time and effort into, but people all across the country that I knew started sharing it and started cheering it and saying, hey, yeah, the Seattle City Council did something really, really right. I think during this national election, a lot of young people are feeling apathy. They feel like they're stuck between two subpar choices, and it's hard for people to get engaged on a local level. But this is a reminder that local is where the change often happens. And we're actually, today is the last day you can vote in the August primary. So if you have your ballots, please put them in a ballot box or mail them in. The turnout thus far is really depressingly low, but this is what happens when you elect progressive candidates. This is what happens. They pass progressive policies, and you can see change. You can see people become encouraged and politically active in your own neighborhood.
Sydney Brownstone is a reporter for The Stranger.